Welcome back, everyone, to the Nerdiest Podcast in the Midwest, the Midwestern Nerds, a podcast where I've already said the word Quantumania as much as the movie. I bumbled that already. Anyway, we are your Midwestern Nerds. It's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Midwestern Nerds, on Instagram at Midwestern Nerds Pod, I think. Are there all three Midwestern Nerds now that I'm looking at it again? Wow, I'm doing really well. Cool. If you want to email us, it's midwesternnerds@gmail.com. I am your host today, somehow still surviving through this, K.O. Kyle Olson. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, the lovely, the negative, the beautiful.
I am Brian Stoffel, and I am not a dick.
Oh man, welcome back everyone. We're gonna be talking finally about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, a movie that came out last week. I have already seen twice. We're gonna get into a little bit non-spoiler thoughts at the beginning here, and then we're gonna dive. I'll give a warning before we dive deep into everything that has happened, but we need to get through this because I've been so excited to talk about this. There's been so much that has come out of this movie. So, Brian, I want to give you your non-spoiler thoughts to kick us off.
First of all, I just need to ask.
Yep.
The episode that you edited and added in an intro, how many takes did that take?
That was one take. I don't know what happened. The pressure of being, we're not even live.
We're not.
I don't know, man.
Wow, you could have fooled me, buddy. Hey, but that's okay.
The power of editing. They're gonna be listening to this like, I don't even, it was pretty good. I don't know what they're talking about.
Editing is powerful, but I don't know if it's that powerful.
Yeah, we'll see.
I am Brian Stoffel. I guess I am kind of a dick in this episode. especially when it comes to general thoughts on Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. I gotta say, I've been preaching a lot lately about quantity over quality as far as the MCU's been going lately. This, I feel like, is another one of those cases. What the fuck was this movie? It was so messy, it was so weird, there was so much stuff going on. It's called Ant-Man and the Wasp barely has anything to do. MODOK? What the hell is up with that guy? Not my MODOK from the comics. And Kang? Not my Kang from the comics. Come on. I mean, Ant-Man took him out? What the fuck is up with that? Oh, yeah, this is non-spoilers. Oops. Spoilers. Ant-Man took out Kang.
Did he, though?
What the fuck is this movie? That being said, I'm just shitting you. Man, I loved this movie. There's a lot of hate that's going on with this movie that I can see some points of view, but at the same time, and this is the guy that takes a lot of this stuff a little too seriously a lot, but it's an Ant-Man movie. Can we just like have some fun and like not overthink every little step and minute detail of the movie? I've seen this movie once. I'm sure if I get, you know, a second, third, fourth viewing of it, I might, you know, pick up some things that I didn't notice, maybe some irregularities, some plot holes, what have you. But overall, I generally like loved this movie. I had a great time with this movie. Everything that was happening was working for me. We'll get into the one or two like little nitpicky things that I have about it, but otherwise, like I absolutely loved this movie.
I can only imagine if we get some random, like, because this is a Marvel podcast, eventually we'll get someone who just kind of jumps in, wants to hear other people's thoughts about the movie, and you start off with that rant, and then you're like, well, fuck, it's just another thing, and then they don't even listen to the rest of it. So thank you for our faithful listening.
I know I can be a little bit of a negative Nancy at times.
Do you like and, I said that in your intro?
and so I just wanted to play that little bit because, you know, that's, I feel like that's what our audience is expecting out of me at this point.
And it's truthfully, it's what I expected out of you. I text you when I came out of the movie because I watched it before you, and I text you. I was like, I don't even want to give you any of my thoughts because if I tell you that I really loved it, then it might have raised your expectations or what. I don't, like, I didn't even want to say anything, but then you took that as, oh God, it's terrible. And I was like, well, that kind of works. Let's lower the expectations a little bit. But then you came out of it the same way.
I went into it kind of with my brain and expectations completely shut off because I was supposed to go to this movie on Thursday night around the same time as you. And shit happened where I had to cancel my tickets. I was very upset about it, especially because the reason that I canceled my tickets ended up being for no particular reason at all. Something that I thought was a big deal ended up not being a big deal and ended up being nothing. And like, it's one of those moments where it's like, oh, really? Like, fuck me, I guess. But ended up going the next night. And at that point, I was like, I just need to win because I usually work 4/10s Monday through Thursday, and I also had to go in that Friday. So it was like a full day of work and then the movie. After not having the movie the night before and all the shit show of the night before, I was like, I just need to like sit down and just enjoy this movie and shut my brain off and everything. And I loved it. I had a really great time, and we're gonna get into all the things that we loved about it coming up.
Yeah, I don't understand a lot of the hate. I the critics, whatever, they can say whatever they want. At this point, it feels like larger movie media has turned on Marvel, and just because they're such a powerhouse, they just hate everything they do now. They just want to nitpick it and everything. But like you said, it's an Ant-Man movie. It's weird shit. This is the quantum fucking realm. Like, it was just so much fun to dive in there, learn some about the world, and just be thrown into it. Like, it meet all these new characters. Fucking MODOK. I can't wait to talk about MODOK. Kang was awesome. Like, I can understand people's issue with the ending, which we'll talk about. But I actually, because the first time I watched it, I came out of it, I was like, I don't know about that. I didn't like that. But as I watched it again, and as I've kind of thought about it more, I like it the more and more. Yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it as well. So let's dive into some spoilers. Spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it yet, fucking turn off the podcast. Go watch it.
I mean, I already ruined it for you. Ant-Man defeats Kang. So
Ant-Man does. Yes, Ant-Man definitely.
Or technically, does he? We'll get into that.
We will, because I have theories. Of course
I have some thoughts and theories on that as well.
So I want to open our talks with the opening, but also the ending, because I thought the movie was very well bookended with the opening narration of Scott walking through being a normal guy, high five, and yeah, I'm a hero, getting the fucking employee of the century at Baskin Robbins and all that stuff that we saw in the trailer. And then it was very well done at the end where he was doing the same thing, but things weren't all normal then, where he's starting to debate again. We're diving deep into this already, where he's already starting to go, you know, oh shit, did we defeat Kang? Did I just unleash a worse evil onto the world? What's going on? I can't do anything about it, it's fine. And then he just gets, but like, that was so perfect for Scott. Like, even though a lot of people say like his arc was disrupted in this movie because of that ending, but I didn't think so. I thought it was, his arc still worked, and then this ending credit worked, because not everything is right and he knows that. But it's also, he's fucking Ant-Man. It's not like he can do a lot about it. So I just wanted to talk about these opening credits.
So I loved the opening of it. The way that this movie opens up definitely felt like the Ant-Man movie, like the Ant-Man movies, I should say. We get Scott's narration, which I loved, where this is like one of the first times in the MCU where like things are going his way. Like every single movie, including the ones that weren't his movies, but he still showed up in, like, it's always like Scott against the world. And for the first time, he's like, oh, look at me. This is great. I'm an Avenger. I'm a superstar. I saved the world. Like, this was me. And things are great. The guy that shows up in the trailers that would have been the Stan Lee cameo of thank you, Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
I read the other day that was an accidental improv that they ended up putting into the movie. He wasn't supposed to say Spider-Man. He messed his lines up, and the fact that he was like 100% committed to it.
That's so great.
They were like, yep, this is what, let's rewrite this and make this the joke of the movie now.
Yeah, because it works so well with how, again, with the ending credit where he's going through and he says, oh, I know, you're the other bug, you're the ant. $12.
Yeah.
Like, that's so good. And it worked too, because no one actually knows who Peter Parker Spider-Man is right now too. So like, yep. That's so awesome that was an improv and they kept it in. Oh my God. Lovely.
Yeah. So I love that. It kind of took the movie that you would think would be Ant-Man 3 and like crammed it into like the first 10 minutes of the movie before like we just get thrown right into the quantum realm for the majority of the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I will say the only thing that about the first part of the movie before we go into the quantum realm, one of my nitpicky things, I wish we could have had some of the original cast from the first two movies, both there and maybe at the end. Like, not just Scott's security gang of like Michael Pena and the two T.I. and David Dismalchin, which does show up in the quantum realm as somebody else.
Yep.
Not just those guys, but also Cassie's mom and dad. Because when Cassie gets arrested, her True. Stepdad is a cop. I thought it was a little weird that he wasn't there.
Yeah.
That like, why would we call Scott to bail her out of jail when your stepdad is on the force?
Absolutely fair. And Hope was the first one there too.
Yeah, even if you could have had both of them in that scene, like yeah. both the mom and the stepdad, they all come to bail her out, and then that's when they you could have still played the scene the same way, but like including them in it, because like I understand the people that are like, yeah, this doesn't feel like a continuation of the Ant-Man franchise in that regards of like, yes, we're focusing on our main family
mm-hmm.
Here, but there is like the background characters that you could have found ways to incorporate them, at least for be like, hey, come on set for a day, be a part of this scene. You'll be in the movie. You'll get your residuals. Everybody's happy. So that was a little weird, but otherwise, like, I liked how it opened, and I like how we just kind of get thrown into it.
Yeah.
We get the development of our new Cassie. We get like the development of like Hank and Janet now being back together, and how they're kind of like. Of like grandma and grandpa to Cassie, almost like they
calls him grandpa at one point. It was super.
Yeah,
cool.
they take her on in that sort of way. I loved the shot of Scott and Hope like sitting on top of the Golden Gate Bridge, just looking out at the sunset. And I was like, ooh, I was like, I love this movie. It had a great flow. It was 2 hours. It didn't feel too long. Could we have had like a, like maybe a little bit of like a, Like, I don't know, Ant-Man and Wasp taking down some robbers in that opening scene, you know.
But Scott's not like an acting hero, and that's kind of the point of that beginning montage.
True. Thing. Yep. True. So, but again, yeah.
Yeah, okay. and we got the introduction of the Pym Foundation or whatever, the Hope has taken it over.
Yeah,
and it is now the Van Pym. I can't remember what the fuck it's called.
You would know better than me, Mr. Two-timer.
it's a quick flash on the wall in the first 2 minutes of the movie, so there's no way I was gonna remember that. But I think that'll be important going forward. She's taking care of, I think they're trying to do more housing and stuff, which I think will come into play now that they actually have a tunnel into the quantum realm too. So I think
one important thing that I definitely forgot until like listening to other people talk about it, the device that Cassie and Hank make
mm-hmm.
as like the whole MacGuffin that gets them into the quantum realm,
right?
They do say that gives them the ability to track people into the quantum realm, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, that was really quick how they were able to find them. And I think even when I was in the theater, like for a split second I was like, oh, that was quick. But like, they definitely established that in the beginning, that like they made that, and that's like one of the things that it can do. And if you think about it, that's probably the main reason why Hank helps Cassie to build this, because both of them lost like the most important people in their lives to the quantum realm for years.
Mm-hmm.
So now that, especially if they're still helping out Ghost, which if you remember from like the second movie, they're going into the quantum realm to get like energy to like help her be able to like stay stable and whatnot. Mm-hmm. If they have to send people in there, their first priority is, all right, we got to make sure that we can get them out in case something happens. But yeah, that was just something that I definitely forgot during the movie.
Yeah.
But this movie is interesting because I feel like there are some Marvel movies where in the past I've been like, I've been the huffy guy that's been like, well, that's not my Captain America movie. That's how it was done in the books. That's not this, and that. And like, for some reason, this movie, I was like, no, this was fun. Like, and again, there are some nitpicky things that I've already started to touch on that, like, I noticed, yeah. But like, it didn't bother me in this movie like it did with some people. And I don't know. It's just weird how like so passionately against this movie some people are. Like,
sure.
There are a lot of people that treat this movie like it was Thor the Dark World, and I was like, this movie was so much better than that.
So one of those small nitpicky things that you were talking about that a lot of other people had issue with for this movie was Janet and how she was acting, which again, I don't really understand. The people are complaining that Janet apparently in the past was okay with people going into the quantum realm, and then all of a sudden this movie she's not okay with it. But I think people are misconstruing that, where she knew, like in at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, she knew where they were sending Scott, right, to just go collect the, I think it was the quantum energy for Ghost, right? It's not that she knew, they still didn't know about this small city. That's not where they were sending him. So I'm sure she was probably worried about maybe him finding it, but she knew that that's not where they were going. In this movie, they were sent, Cassie was sending out a signal to the entire quantum realm. So that's why all of a sudden she was like, oh shit, Kang's going to find this. And it ended up being MODOK anyway. But yeah, I didn't understand this gripe with people. Like, obviously she didn't tell anyone about this, so she's not going to tell anyone else that she's worried until there's a time to be worried, you know?
Yeah, I didn't really understand it either, especially because I think, if I'm remembering correctly, they made a point to say that where Kang and where all of this takes place in the quantum realm, this movie, was a point of the quantum realm that they weren't able to get to before this point? Like, didn't they say something like they couldn't shrink that small, or like
Janet mentions that Hank couldn't find it, like it was too, he wasn't looking long enough or something,
or like he was unable to get that far, and she's the one that says that. So again, yeah, she wouldn't. Why tell them about that? And why even bring up Kang if you know that you're never going to get that far? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And she never wanted to bring up Kang because she knows that she feels the guilt of, you know, setting him free.
Well, not only that, but like, yeah, like, why? If your whole intent is to keep him trapped down there, don't bring him up, because then nobody else knows about him. If you start bringing him up, you know, word could get around and maybe somebody wants to try to break him out. They're like, oh, there's somebody that's trapped down there, maybe we need to help free him, you know. So why bring it up if you don't need to? And even when they were down in the quantum realm and like Hope and Hank both were like, what is it you're not telling us? Why aren't you telling us everything? A, they didn't really have time, because during all that stuff, like, things kept happening. Like, people found them, and then they're going to go and talk to Bill Murray. And, like, Bill Murray was supposed to be, like, an ally to like, help them out. Like, they had no clue that he was going to turn on them.
Yeah.
Which, and then when that happens, like, then they got to fight their way out. And by the time they get out of that and they're on their way to Kang, that's when she tells them about him, because that's the only time that she's had up to that point to tell them. And as far as like, oh, well, why couldn't you tell us like anything that happened in the quantum realm? You're trapped down there for 30 years and you're going through all of that stuff. You have all that PTSD. Plus, Janet is very similar to Cap at the end of his first movie, where now, like, time moved on without you, and now you're trying to, like, get reacclimated with the world again. Not just reestablishing your relationships with your family, but also just getting used to the way that the world is and the way that everything works and life just in general. And it's like, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, there's this dangerous guy down in the quantum realm that I accidentally helped. Like, why would she need to bring that up, you know?
Yeah, because she's stuck, because if she brings it up, like you said, there's going to be people who are, oh, there's people down there, you know, we need to explore the world, or there's someone stuck down there, we need to save them. But as what happened, she doesn't bring it up, and then people start snooping, and that's when they get in trouble. So I don't know, I didn't have a problem with that. I wanted to bring it up because a lot of other people did. I don't think there was a lot of world breaking there. Even if there is, I think it's pretty easy to retcon. Another thing you slightly mentioned there, they mention Kang a lot. So we get Kang right away, right? We get that little prequel, like, flashback of Kang landing in the quantum realm and Janet finding him, saving him. And then they start, you know, that's where their relationship starts. But then we don't see Kang in the movie for, I believe it's 46 minutes. Peeved me a little bit, only because they just kept using him, and I wanted to hurt someone because they're trying to play around. Oh, he's gonna find you. Oh, you didn't tell him about him. Like, we all knew going into the movie, the promotional shit was like, hey, Kang's here. But then the whole movie, again, they showed him to us at the beginning, and then the whole movie they're just like, we're not going to tell you who the bad guy is. You'll just have to find out in an hour. It's like, it's, oh my God.
It's to build the suspense.
It obviously didn't hamper my enjoyment of the movie, but next time you watch the movie, just pay attention to how many times they mention Kang without actually mentioning Kang, and it's infuriating. Just say his name. Oh my God.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to bother me at all.
Someone like Krylar. Oh, you didn't tell him about him? Why are you playing the pronoun game? You didn't tell him about Kang? There's just It just peeves me a little bit. Because Janet, I like you mentioned, yes, there's a lot of things that happen and Janet doesn't really have a chance to say anything. But at the same time, she easily is like, she easily could have been the, I don't know, fuck. This dude Kang is bad.
I think the real question here is, why did Bill Murray feel like this is the role that he needed to be in the MCU? Like, before this movie came out, he was like, I was begging people to let me into the MCU. And like, this is what you chose?
Is that okay, Bill? Be Krylar.
You got eaten by a shrimp that you ate yourself like 2 minutes before.
Did he get eaten, though? I don't think he actually got eaten.
They didn't show it, but yes. I wouldn't be surprised if we never see him again. Especially because
death, and I don't believe it.
True, but if you know about all of like the drama that's been going on right now with Bill Murray in Hollywood, like, he's definitely the next actor to get canceled. So it wouldn't surprise me if we never saw him again.
Oh, I didn't hear any of that. That makes me very sad.
Yeah, apparently he's a big old asshole.
Oh, that's so very sad. Anyway.
But yeah, I was just like, because I remember before this movie came out, like, it was like, oh, Bill Murray's going to be in here. Yeah. And it's like, oh, who's he going to be? And then I was like, wait, that was it?
Yeah. And apparently, from what I've heard, that's exactly Krylar's imprint in the comics as well. Yeah. Oh, what? Really?
I had never heard of him before this movie.
Apparently he's in later like once.
Him, the telepath dude, there's like a couple other people, not including MODOK, that like,
of course,
I've heard of MODOK but before this movie, but there were a number of characters that I had never heard of before this movie. And Krylar, which, again, I only know now because you've said it like 5 times. But before that, I was like, oh, it's just Bill Murray. Because that's basically all it was. It was like, oh, this is the quantum realm that just so happens to have Bill Murray.
Pretty much.
And he slept with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, the insinuating on that was very entertaining, I thought. But I thought it was very sweet that Hank still had her back. There was no hesitation there during that battle. I thought that
I liked his Quantum Realm outfit. Like, he looked like a badass, like, cowboy.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, that trench coat, that little bandana thing you got around your neck, the goggles, that's working for me.
Hank was honestly one of the better characters in this movie. I thought he was great.
I loved both him and Janet in this movie. Yeah. I think, and a lot of people are like, oh, why was it called Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania when the Wasp didn't have anything to do, which we'll get to.
We will.
But if you wanted to, you could be like, well, they're not talking about Hope Wasp. They're talking about Janet Wasp, because I feel like she was equally as important to the movie as Scott was.
And you could say the same thing for Hank. I think, personally. He saves the day.
He does save the day, but before that, like, he's kind of just along for the ride.
Fair.
Somebody said that, and I don't remember who said it in a podcast this last week, but I never thought of it until they said it, and I actually kind of wish that this was how the movie went down. He was talking about how he wished that Hank would have gotten separated from Janet and Hope, like, when they first get to the Quantum Realm, just kind of how, like, Scott and Cassie get separated from the group, and that Hank would have been found by the ants sooner, and they could have done their whole side thing, and because then you'd give Hope a lot more to do, and you could work on that relationship with her and her mother more if it was just the two of them trying to find everybody else. And I was like, I feel like I kind of would have liked that a little bit better, especially because when the ants do show up at the end, I was like, dang, that would have been cool if, like, Hank could have gone and, like, seen their whole civilization and, like, maybe they have to work on some other MacGuffin to, like, get them to the group or, like, to help take down Kang even more. Like, it could have been a fun little side adventure of just, like, Hank geeking out with his super smart, intelligent ants.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I don't know. I think we would have missed out on a lot of good moments too. I agree. Hope needed more to do in this movie. But the interactions that we got of Janet and Hank, I think we're still good. Like her saying, well, I was down here for 30 years. I had needs. And then Hope's like, Mom. And then Hank was like, I went on a date with this one girl one time. And it's,
then she's okay. Like, well, why didn't it work out? And he's like, well, just wasn't you. Even I like audibly was like, aw.
Yeah, dude, it's a great moment. I love Hank in this movie. Yeah, but it's so let's talk more about the quantum realm and the characters and all the people in the civilization. I want to talk more about, I want to hear your thoughts on, I don't know any of their names, but we got William Henry Jackson, I think is his name. Great actor from The Good Place. I think he is so underutilized in this role, but he was still fantastic in it. Zeb, I believe is the goo monster's name. Drink the ooze. Amazing.
That was David Dismalchin.
Yes.
He was the goo guy.
Which, again, going back to...
I have holes!
Turns into Kirby at the end. That was fucking cool. It would have been cool to have Luis down here to interact and just been like, hey, man, you sound kind of familiar. I don't know. There could have been something there. Luis would have been so much fun with all of these characters.
Or what I was thinking during this movie, too, and even afterwards, like... I feel like you still could have gotten the old crew like to interact with our group in the quantum realm. Like, forget the portal thingy that sucks them in that Hank and Cassie were making.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that like Scott and Hope would have been like, hey, just in case this happens, like, this is how you can stay in contact with us. Like, if they could have found like some way to be like, hey, is there anything you can do from the outside world just to get those guys again? Like,
exactly.
They didn't need a big part in this movie, but they were noticeably missed for me in this movie and by a lot of people too. Yeah.
And just a couple cutbacks of them trying and failing to figure out how to get them out would have been hilarious. Yes. Because obviously towards the end, you could do the exact movie how you did it. Just have a couple scenes here or there where the guys are still in the real world trying to figure out how to get them out. But they know nothing about quantum. Like, they're trying to read Hank's journals and all this shit, trying to figure it out. I think there would have been some good stuff there. And again, Luis talking to some of these characters would have been awesome.
And even if you would have had Holes Dude and David Dasmalchin's character, like... somehow like talk to each other and be like, huh, this guy sounds familiar, he sounds kind of cool, he sounds kind of interesting, you know, like something like along those lines could have been fun too.
Yeah, it does feel weird that those characters were not in the movie. I don't really understand it, but it is what it is. What was the next thing I wanted to talk about? We didn't really dive into many of the characters. We kind of got more on the older characters again. Have any thoughts on those characters?
I liked them. I feel like they served their purpose in this movie. But kind of going off what you said about, I don't remember the actor's name, but the telepath dude, like
Quaz.
They had a purpose, but like they weren't that monumental, I guess I would say. Like, if I never saw them again, I don't think I'd be too heartbroken about it. But I did like all of them. The quantum realm characters, for me, I was like, oh, I can tell that this was a writer on Rick and Morty, because a lot of like those characters and like that, the settings and all that stuff felt very Rick and Morty, where mm-hmm. like, and I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I was like, oh, I've tasted a flavor similar to this before. And just like that, I enjoy it.
Also, for the people out there who are like, this is just an episode of Rick and Morty, the fucking Council of Kangs was a thing way before the Council of Ricks. I just need to, people
it
talking about that.
It definitely was.
So, Rick and Morty, I'm not a big Rick and Morty guy. Some of their fans piss me off sometimes. But neither here nor there. I enjoyed the influence on this episode, or in this movie. Yeah, I liked all the characters. Who was the lady, but like Centaura, so, I think was her name.
Oh, the big buff chick. She was cool. She was, I liked her.
Yeah. And it was perfect. Like, her, like, she knew, like, oh, you guys are from the upstairs world. I can't remember what she, you're from yeah. above, I think she calls it. She's like, oh, he's going to be looking for you. So get out of here. Like, and then sure shit, she was right. They're there. And that's where we get the introduction. Darren Cross returning as MODOK, which I thought was so, just so good. People who didn't like this, I don't think they know MODOK because I thought this was so great. I thought it was a good comedic version. They didn't need to do anything special with it. He didn't need to be this big bad threat. It did feel a little bit weird getting his backstory before we got to Kang. It felt like there could have been a comedic, like Kang gave his backstory and then MODOK can do his a little bit later. But I don't know. I like just about everything they did with Darren Cross in this movie. Sorry, MODOK.
I understand some of the points of view of people that are upset with MODOK in this movie. I understand the people that are like, Hope did nothing in this movie, but yet MODOK was more developed as a character than the majority of the characters in this movie. The fact that the writer of the movie is most proud of Kang, or not Kang, of MODOK from this movie, which you can definitely tell. Thinking about it now, I feel like this movie might have been either written or was starting to develop before Kang was announced, or at least like thought of as like the big bad for Phase 5, 6 going forward. And that I feel like MODOK could have easily been the main villain and the only villain of this movie. Like the person that Janet was helping in the quantum realm to escape could have been Darren Cross, MODOK, in a different draft of the movie. And he could have been the main problem, the main antagonist. But that being said, I loved him. MODOK was definitely one of my favorite parts of this movie. I kind of had a feeling before going into this movie that it was going to be Darren, because I know I found out that the actor was going to be in the movie before I went to it. And I was like, I don't know how they would have him in this movie unless they found him in the quantum realm. But I was like, but he also got like crushed into the quantum realm from the first movie. And I was like, oh, what if he's MODOK? And like, it's not the character from the comics, but it's so similar to the character in the comics, because MODOK in the comics, even in the comics, Marvel realizes how ridiculous of a character MODOK is. He's still like super weird. He's still kind of cringy at times. He's still like a egotistical, narcissistic, like asshole kind of dude. He's like the super smart, like intelligent leader for the most part of AIM in the comics, but like I've heard people be like, that's not the MODOK from the comics. And I was like, how many Marvel comics do you actually read, person? Because I don't feel like you really know. Like I loved MODOK. I thought that he was hilarious. All of the I don't want to be a dick, but I think it's too late. And then the joke of him being like hi Hank, and then Darren, and like everybody. Like every single person that knew Darren from the first movie, when they first see him, Darren? Like that joke never got old for me. Absolutely loved it. I was a little sad that he died, but at the same time, the way he went out, at least I'll die an Avenger, was funny. I laughed. I laughed pretty hard at that, especially Scott being like, okay, buddy.
My theater definitely enhanced my experience with MODOK. I had a very good theater my first showing. Everyone was very into it. Everyone was laughing at times that were like, it was a very like participating theater, which I normally is not a good thing for me, but it very much worked in this comedy setting. Especially during the montage where he gets crushed and he gets found and then he's hanging before he gets the suit and you see his little ass cheeks and it's just
his little baby butt.
Yeah, dude, it's just, it's so perfect because yes, like you mentioned, MODOK is just a goofy, silly character. Like, yes, he's taken seriously at some points, just like in this movie. Like, yeah, he's a killing, he's the perfect, it, what, the ultimate killing machine or whatever the hell he calls himself.
Yeah.
And, but at the end of the day, he really is just a joke. And that was exactly what this was supposed to be. But not only that, like, there was good storytelling to get him tied into this. The main reason that he got sent to the Quantum Realm was because he was attacking Cassie and Scott sent him there by shrinking down and breaking his tech, whatever, I guess. And then Cassie's the reason that he's able to find them and bring them into the Quantum Realm. Like, it's just a really good tie-in. And then Cassie, again, is the one who's able to convince him to not be a dick. Like, it's actually, like, it's not just doing it just because it's funny and it worked, but, like, there's actual story driven behind it, and he ends up helping them in the battle of Kang, with Kang towards the end, too. So, I loved everything with MODOK. He was never supposed to be this huge. I don't think he was ever supposed to be the main threat. I don't know if that would have worked, but at the end of the day, he works very well in this role.
I feel, the more I think about it, the more I do feel like he was, and then like Kevin Feige and Marvel were like, actually, Kang's going to be our big bad. We need to start putting Kang in all these movies. Can you put him in this movie? And that's how we worked out his role, which, do we want to just get to Kang right away?
Yeah, let's get into
it. As a good segue.
Yeah.
I loved Kang. And even everybody who hated this movie can admit that Kang was the standout of this movie. Jonathan Majors as Kang was amazing. Absolutely amazing. He was he's sympathetic when he needs to be in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And in the flashbacks with Janet until we get the turning moment, which some people are like, oh, how convenient that she was able to. It's the machine. It's what it's supposed to.
It's literally connected to his mind. Yes,
it's what it does. Just quit looking for things to hate, dude, about it.
That's the thing. People are just turning on Marvel at this point. It's just sad.
But he's menacing and he's scary. There are some criticisms about, you know, how his way to get Scott to get the, I forget what it is, the part of his ship that he needs to get, sure, out.
The core.
The fact that he's just like, oh, if you don't do this, like, I'll kill Cassie. And I can agree that that motivation could have been tweaked a little bit differently. Because the trailers definitely set it up to make it look like Kang was going to offer Scott the chance to, like, go back and get the time back that he missed with Cassie, both.
That's the trailer snap line. And that was obviously never the script. That's them. That's the marketing department fucking up.
But at the same time, like, that could have been a little bit more interesting of a way to manipulate and motivate, sure, Scott. Instead of just being like, do this or I'll kill her. And with him being able to control time and, like, even, like, shrink their clothes or their body or whatever, like, if he could have, you know, maybe been like, well, if you don't do this, like, you're gonna lose more time and, like, fuck with her aging, like, fuck with her.
But he doesn't have his time powers down in the Quantum Realm because it's outside of time.
That's true.
And that's why he's so powered down and why this actually works. He's not a super powerful Kang right now.
I know people are upset about it.
I know.
It didn't bother me. No. Again, it was one of those things where I was like, could this been tweaked a little bit? Yes. But does it need to be? No.
Scott was never going to help him unless he had that motivation. I don't think the motivation would have been, I'll give you a couple more years with your younger daughter that you kind of missed. Like, I don't think he would have been like, well, sure, let me help you break out of here then. I think it would have been tempting And then maybe he could have offered that, and then Scott would have ultimately said no, and then he's like, all right, fine, I'll just kill her if you don't help me. That would have been maybe a better – but I like that Kang – no, he – Jonathan Majors said at one point that the way he tried to act, at least up until that fight, was like no moves wasted. Like, it's a very calm – he's just standing there. He just does stuff with his fingers. He's not doing, like, these big, you know, like, force movements from Star Wars that we see. He's just kind of doing shit. So I think it's really good that he just right away, I need you to help me. If you don't help me, I'm going to kill your daughter. Like, he's just right to the point. And because he's so smart, at the beginning of the interaction with Scott, he's like, I don't know. Who are you? Oh, you're an Avenger. Are you the one with the hammer? I don't know who, you know, but then he clearly just calls him Ant-Man like a minute later. So he clearly knew how to get to Scott already, which is just so, so good, which makes me a little bit more upset. Here's my one mate. I don't even want to say major because it makes it sound bigger than it is. I have a small issue with the plot. Why did Kang just keep Cassie? Why didn't he just give Cassie back to Scott? Because that feels like his undoing in this whole thing. If he would have just said, all right, thanks for my core, here's Cassie, done deal, he would have got his ship and his people out of there. It feels so uncalculated for him to just be like, nah, never mind, I'm gonna piss you off so that you continue to go again, or now you're going against me because I pissed you off and I went against our deal. I don't know. I don't see I couldn't figure out a reason why he decided to keep Cassie in his hold. I just couldn't figure that out. It felt like it needed to happen for the story, and that was the reason he did it.
I feel like you're starting to rub off on me a little bit too much when I say what I'm gonna say next.
Yes.
With time and multiverse and variants and all of these things that the MCU is now introducing, there's a lot of ways that you can introduce headcanon.
Yeah. And I want to do that with this. I've been thinking about this for a week now.
I think so. Again, headcanon at this mm-hmm. point, because maybe this can be addressed and fixed and, you know, cleaned up a little bit better in a future movie. But for now, maybe, and again, this could have been fixed too with like a little line or something said by somebody in this movie, mm-hmm. but maybe the reason he kept Cassie is because he knew from all of his time in different timelines and experiences that if he would have let Cassie go, that would have become a bigger problem for him. But again,
I don't know. It just that to me has just been the biggest thing for me. I just don't. It hurt the plot for me because it's all of a sudden it's like Kang has been so calculated and smart about everything he does, and then it feels like he makes a very emotional decision in that moment. But I don't know why. You know, like I feel like there's reasons when villains mess up for something, when they do something they shouldn't do that ultimately becomes their undoing. There's usually a good reason behind it, like they're motivated behind something. I don't know.
Where does she go? Because she's with them when he goes into the, what's it called? The storm thing where he's getting the core.
They keep her because, yeah, she's with him there, and then they just must keep him. They just keep her in captivity, remember? Because the next time we see her, she's about to get locked up again, but then she breaks out, and then she goes breaks out Gentora.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It just feels, I can't figure out a reason. I headcanon, we say it and we laugh about it. I think it is a useful thing for an audience I think there are certain things that movies particularly don't explain fully because it's either implied and they're going to talk about it later, or they just want to leave it open to interpretation. I think headcanon is good in fandom. Like, there's ways to fill in the gaps. So I don't know, that one, I don't want to spend too much more time on it, but that one bugged me a little bit.
Yeah, or they could have easily just had Kang say a line along the lines of like, oh, I still had a use for you and needed like some kind of, yeah, you know, leverage. I needed to keep that leverage or something like that.
It's just like, why go back on the deal at that point? I don't know.
Because a lot of the comic book, like hardcore comic book fans also have a big problem with the third act of the movie because Kang is taken out so easily by ants and Ant-Man and all this stuff, which.
Okay. We'll get into this because if you can tell me what Kang's powers are, I can then tell you why he got beat.
I don't have a problem with it. And I was actually going to argue against it too, because for me, I viewed it as this person who Kang is this person who, despite being trapped in a place where he can't use any of his technology and his time travel abilities and all that to get out, he's still built this empire. Mm-hmm. And he still built all this technology despite the odds, to the mm-hmm. point now where he still feels like he is the conqueror. He still feels like he's the almighty, all powerful. And that's a lot. That's a big ego. And now that he's got the core, he's like, okay, like I got what I need. Like, we're going to get out of this. Like, you think Ant-Man's going to stop me? Yeah. You think that him and his family are going to be able to stop me? And it's just when you get that big of an ego, eventually you're going to have your downfall, because you're taking everything for granted. You know, you're thinking that you're above everything, and you're not making the smart moves because you're not considering the outcome that is happening before you as a possibility. And so, and again, he's human. Kang is human. And all of his abilities and powers and everything is all technology. And even when he gets like overtaken by the ants, like they show him like ripping off the gloves because his technology is now damaged. It's no good. Like, he's just a man at the end. I loved the ants coming in.
Yeah.
I loved even when he came down and he was like blasting people away. There were some people that were like, how come he disintegrated everybody but the heroes? I don't care. It was an entertaining fight. Yes, it's a movie. And it was an entertaining fight. And I loved everything that was going on with it. I want to address the thing that I was worried about, which ultimately didn't bother me, but was a slight annoyance.
Sure.
The fist fight, and then the you can't beat me, and that I don't need to beat you if we both lose line that they gave away in the trailer. That shouldn't have even been in the trailer.
Agreed.
Like, I'm annoyed by that.
Agreed.
But I'll give this to them, because I was like, all my predictions that I had going into this movie of how it was going to end based off of those clips, like, were a possibility, to the point where like I was at the edge of my seat being like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Scott could have died. Mm-hmm. Kang could have easily killed off Scott. I thought that was going to happen. Not only Scott, but Scott and Hope could have both been trapped in the quantum realm as the ultimate sacrifice, which I thought could have happened before going into the movie. So all of these things are happening. I was like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? This movie had me. And everybody's like, oh, even in the mid-credit scene with the Council of Kings, they make the big point about like, oh, our most dangerous has been eliminated, is now defeated. It's like, is he? Because this is my thought.
Not yet.
We've seen all of these variants of Kang so far, both in Loki season one the little tease of Loki season two as the post credits scene, and all of these Kangs that are in the mid credits scene. The one thing that's curious to me is the only Kang that we've seen so far that looks like the Kang from the comics is the one that's in this movie. And the fact that that even the Council of Kangs is like, he was the most dangerous. He was the most deadly of us. He was the biggest threat to us.
They exiled him.
I don't think he died. I think he got sucked into that thing and he's displaced somewhere else. And I think Kang Dynasty is when we see him come back. And now, not only is he pissed off at all the Kangs and just pissed off in general, now he's pissed off at Ant-Man. He's pissed off at Hope. Like, if they're going to die now, it's definitely going to be Kang Dynasty because he's got all of the reason to hate of them. Janet, Hank, all of them.
He's trapped somewhere, or he's just as soon as he gets his technology right, he's going to kill Scott. Like, that is going to be his first thing that he does, and then he's going to continue on his mission.
I do think he's the main king, and I do think he's going to be back.
So, yeah, I completely agree. I don't think he's dead. I had this theory after I watched it the first time. I was on this hardcore theory that all of this was planned by Kang. Like, he meant to lose this battle and get put into that core because he knew that he could gain more power by this or something. Like, in my head, he needed the Council of Kangs to think he was dead, which he is successful in now. I don't know if that's necessary. I don't think that was his plan. I think he is getting lucky at that point. However, I do think, if he would have escaped, he got greedy. He wanted to escape with his big city and his big army. He got greedy. That's ultimately his downfall and keeping Cassie, but we talked about that. But at the end of the day, now we saw Darren Cross in this movie. If anyone thinks that Kang died from that, you're just screwing yourself at that point. We literally saw almost the same exact thing. And we know what happens when you're inside that core too. We saw multiple people inside that core. So here's the thing. What happened when Scott was in that core? He had to work with his other possibility, his variants inside of that. And they all came together for one common cause. Imagine what Kang is going to be able to do. He has variants of himself, more variants of himself, but he's able to control them.
I didn't even think of all of this, which
he's going to be able to. So after this, he's not even going to need his technology to travel through the time in the multiverse. I think it's going to be ingrained in him now that he was sucked into that core. I think this is going to be, yes, he's still going to have that technology and he's still going to be super smart and he's fucking jacked, which I don't think he was in the comics, but we can thank Creed 3 for that. And so I agree. I think he is the big bad, and it's fine that he was kind of... people are still obviously going to compare him to Thanos. Thanos wasn't the big bad, like, menacing villain until Infinity War. Before that, he was like in a chair. Fucking Ronan defied him to no consequence.
Yeah,
it was his own undoing that he died. And then all of a sudden he's just like, I'll do it myself. And then we don't see him for another 4 years. Like, Thanos wasn't Thanos until the very end when he needed to be. So, and even then, the heroes defeated Thanos before they had to fight another Thanos. I think we're going to do the same thing where the heroes defeat Kang, and then they're going to have to defeat more Kangs. Like, that's obviously what's going to happen. I just don't understand people getting sucked into, oh my god, they killed him already. No, they didn't.
Of course they didn't.
I do want to go back to how they beat him too, because Kang's, like you mentioned, Kang is a person. Kang is just a normal person. He's just incredibly smart. And the reason he's so powerful is because he was able to manipulate time travel, and now he jumps around different time points and brings his future technology to the past and conquers those times. So in this battle, he obviously doesn't have his time control. So that immediately downgrades him down, like his powers go way down. His technology, again, his advantage is the advanced technology. The ants It's just so perfect. They just so happened to fall into a, can't remember what it was called, but time dilation storm, whatever the hell it was. They lived a thousand or thousands of years in one single day. They have future technology now, which they brought to counteract Kang's future technology, destroy it, and now he's just a man throwing punches and kicks. It's just it worked,
which was brutal, and I loved it.
So because you take away everything that makes Kang, and he still kicks ass.
When he's just beating down Scott, and Scott like keeps standing up, he's like, all I kept thinking of was, I wanted him to be like, I could do this all day,
dude. I wanted it, or at least like if he fucked it up a little bit too, that would have been funny. But he did get his own, you know, the line that they put in the trailer, where I don't have to win. We just both have to lose.
Yeah.
Which again, like you mentioned, set me up to believe that either A, he's dying, or B, being stuck in the quantum realm with Kang. So it worked. It made me think something else was going to happen. They subverted my expectations. It works. The whole ending of this movie, and again, MODOK not being a dick and helping with the fight too. everything's just so good. People were like, "Well, how was Cassie just able to reopen the portal and get them out so quickly?"
Which we addressed.
People, pay attention. She literally, they say that they send messages from the quantum realm and it's able to absorb data. It literally absorbed the data to how MODOK opened it. And Janet.
This whole movie is just a learning experience for Kang of like, this is what I did. He's going to go back and rewatch the tape and be like, oh, this is what I should have done differently. Here's how we're going to correct it in the future. He's just going to be even more deadly and more dangerous in the time to come.
And again, like I mentioned, if he would have been successful and got out of the quantum realm, just with his chair or with his people, like the Council of Kangs would have known. And then they go after him again. Now they believe he's dead. That's his ultimate, like, that's going to be huge for him. I love this. This was the beginning of the Kang story.
Wherever he got sent to now, they can easily build that up as like, it was inconvenient at first. But like, he could come back with so much more that we can't even imagine at this point.
He's either somewhere deeper in the quantum realm or he's, maybe he just got shot out to, maybe he's on 616. Maybe he's just there now. Who knows?
Could be.
And like I mentioned, I think he's going to be able to jump multiverses. Again, that's probably why they have a hero who can do that now in America Chavez.
Yep.
I loved everything coming out of this. Them saving Scott, I think, is the best way to do it. It would have been interesting to keep him stuck down there, but now he almost plays the Bruce Banner role in Infinity War, where he comes down.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Where he comes down and says, Thanos is coming.
Yeah, and I could definitely see him being like, Kang is coming. Mm-hmm. And then like Loki showing up and be like, no, Kang is here.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing with so many different Kangs, because obviously we're going to get more and more and more and more. We're already getting another one. I think Moon Knight's good. I don't know. I know they haven't announced any new Moon Knight ship, but Moon Knight versus King Rama Tut could be awesome. Anyway.
We'll get into this next week, but Feige has said that there's going to be more Moon Knight coming.
I missed that. Okay, sick. Anyway. Well, and the Fantastic Four actually has huge ties to Rama Tut as well. Anyway, the point is, I love that Scott is out in the world now, because we're going to have multiple heroes. We already have Scott and Loki who know about Kang and know that something is going to happen. I think we're still going to get like four or five more. Like the Fantastic Four will probably do the same thing where they will defeat a Kang and then just be like, well, shit, there's still more coming. Like, I think we're going to have multiple heroes playing that Bruce Banner role of, like, Kang is coming or Kang is here.
I would love to see Kang in every Marvel project leading up to Kang Dynasty, even if it has nothing to do with Kang. If you were one of them deep diving, like, every detail... mm-hmm. Snooping people that it's just like, that's Jonathan Majors in the background.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't have to do anything in the movie other than just like be like a background extra that you could maybe pick out.
So good. if they did that, especially if like if they were able to get away with it for a movie or two. Oh, that'd be so good. Oh man. Yeah, I love everything coming out of this. And again, I know I touched on the ending montage at the beginning and how it all connects. It's so great. But just if you notice, a lot of the people that he walks by are wearing either purple or green, and he's fixated on those people.
Mm-hmm.
The balloons behind him, I believe, are purple. The cake is very green, and the cake does not taste good. He's back to normal life, but it's not as good as he thought it should be. I honestly, the cake detail was like, oh my God, that's cool. Like, it's just, I don't know. That was just a really cool detail to end the movie on. It feels like a weird gag and like, oh, the Baskin Robbins guy made it. But I think it's like a really good storytelling device to end the movie on.
Plus, I like too how he's just like, now he's just constant anxiety until like the next time we see him, of being like, we did it, right? Like, we beat him. Everything's good. Right?
Yep.
Before we fully wrap this up, we got to get into, again, I'm blanking on the name, like the paradox storm or whatever it is.
Yes.
When he goes down to grab the core, because this was one of the standout scenes in the movie for me too. I want to start off by saying, I know this is possible because they've done it before in the past. Baskin Robbins, please have a Baskin Robbins exclusive Scott Lang Funko Pop. They did it with Stranger Things 3 with Steve in the Scoops Ahoy outfit. He had a sundae in his hand. That was a Baskin Robbins exclusive that you could only get at a Baskin Robbins. I want a Baskin Robbins exclusive Scott Lang in the Baskin Robbins outfit.
With the Jack name tag.
Yes. And don't even call him Scott Lane on the Funko Pop. Just call him Jack.
Jack.
Baskin Robbins Jack.
The man of the Lost Quantumania, Jack.
Yes. Yes. I want it. Especially because like he was the biggest laugh for me in that scene. All of the different Scots, and then they're like,
yeah,
what are you doing here, and why are you dressed like that?
But he's still in there getting, you know, he's part of the pile helping Scott, the real Scott,
which I loved that it was like in any other Ant-Man movie, that'd be the ants,
you know,
helping them to reach the thing, and then instead it was him, and they're all just like, come on, you can do it, man, keep going.
I will say again, a little bit of hope, hate. It is funny that Scott has this moment and like, they're all, oh, let's do it for Cassie. Yeah. Hope just comes in and all of her variants are just with her now. Like there was no character development for Hope at all in this movie.
I kind of wish that there would have been just like a split second where she's flying to help Scott. And if she just would have if they would have taken like 2 seconds to have her just like look side to side and be like, the hell? But just like keep going anyway.
They kind of had that when she first started splitting, but it wasn't, I don't know. However, the character development for Scott in this movie was awesome, where he starts off the movie where Scott's really never been a hero by choice. He was a hero to pay child support so that he could spend time with Cassie. And then in the second movie, well, in Civil War, he's just helping because they ask him to. In Ant-Man and Wasp, he's just helping the Van Dynes because he owes them. And then in Endgame, he's kind of forced to help at that point because he has an answer. He's never just been a hero. And at the beginning of the movie, that's the whole thing. Like Cassie's like, well, at least we're trying to help people. Like you're basically a retired hero at this point. And still throughout the movie, he's basically just trying to protect Cassie. He's just doing whatever he can. He's even helping Kang to protect Cassie. But at the very end, he makes the sacrifice play. A lot of Steve Rogers characteristics in him towards the end. He even had a shield at one point, which I thought was very cool. Yeah. So I really loved this. Felt like a lot of people were saying that this didn't feel like a good closure to the trilogy. I thought this was great. This was the first time that Scott actually chose to be a hero at a certain moment. He could have just left and his family safe. But he stayed back and fought Kang. Like it was, I thought it was so good. We also didn't even mention he was fucking gigantic at one point. He was someone did the math and it was something like fucking 400 some feet. Like, yeah, like four times as big as he's been ever. And so, like, I feel like that should have got, I don't know, more. They tried to play it up in the movie. It didn't get any reaction in my movie theater, which, again, I mentioned was very participatory.
Some of the criticism behind that is just that, like, because of everything in the background and everything being all CGI and green screen, like, it was kind of hard to actually picture that, which, I mean, I can see in a sense, but I always crack up the fact that how slow he gets when he's so big. When
it's
he's
so just funny. Like, dude, and him and Cassie having that moment and their voices are slightly down pitch and slightly slow.
Yeah.
Hilarious. That stuff. Yeah. It's just good attention to detail. Is there anything else?
I was just about to say, anything else you want to talk about?
We should, unless there's something else that you have, we should talk about. I know we've mentioned it a few times, but we should talk about the Council of Kings, and we should talk about the end credit scene as well. Council of Kings, obviously, we see King Ramatut, we see Immortus, and then we see a third one who some people are saying that it's the Scarlet Centurion. A lot of people say that isn't, though, because he's not even wearing scarlet. I think it's a third one that they've probably made themselves to fit whatever story that they want to tell, which is fine. Just a very cool scene. Something that not a lot of people thought that they would be able to pull off in the MCU, making that one, that famous comic strip of the Council of Kings. And it just, I mean, God, Jonathan Majors is amazing. Like, he is just incredible. How many takes did he have to do just to make that scene, first of all? And then just to make, we have now seen really, what, like six versions of Kang. We've seen He Who Remains, The Conqueror, Immortus, Ramatut, this third guy, and then now we've seen Victor Timely as well. It's not like Jonathan Majors is putting on another outfit and talking. They all feel different, and it's just so impressive.
And the one standout in the crowd at the end of that scene where they show like the whole like coliseum of them like cheering, there's one guy that's like towards the front that's like losing his shit, screaming so hard and passionately. And like, that was the one that I was like, huh, you're really going for it there, man.
Yeah. I'm very, because the other thought is, are one of those Kangs from the 616 universe, like that, like has just been living among them somewhere. A lot of people theorizing that he's the one that bought Avengers Tower. And now it's Kang with a Q. We saw that. You can actually see the building with Kang on it in Loki in the Void. It was one of the things that was pruned at one point. So they've teased that as well. Who knows? I can't remember the name of the person of his variant who did that. But anyway, there's clues to Kang being there from the start, which again would be just a really cool thing. And then after that, we got the end credit scene, which was, I'm assuming, just a scene ripped out of Loki season one, much like the first Ant-Man, where we got a scene ripped out of Civil War, which I think was, I think that was a good way to bring that back. And I think they should do that more.
It bothered me a little bit in the first Ant-Man movie, the scene from Civil War, because it was like, to me, it was like, oh, like, yep, we know that Bucky's back. Like that, there, of course, they were going to find him at some point in the movie. And then it was basically just building up to Falcon being like, I know a guy. Fair. Where it's like, okay, like we all knew that Ant-Man was going to be back, but okay, I guess he's going to be in Civil War.
Fair.
This, on the other hand, this worked for me, because when I go back and watch all the other Marvel movies, and we've had this conversation before, like, I don't fucking throw them up in any old order and say that this is the chronological. No, I watch them in release order. And with that, I also go back and I watch, you know, the mid-credit, the post-credit scenes. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting when you go back and then you watch them, you know, beginning to end, which scenes still work and which ones don't. The Ant-Man one leading into Civil War, that one, like, it was cool the first time in the theater, But after that, like, it's never worked for me.
Sure.
This, on the other hand, this sets a tone, which is always going to work. Yes, it's like 20 seconds from season two of Loki. It's not really consequential. All we see is, all right, there's going to be another Kang. Both Loki and Mobius have come back onto working terms, because if you remember the end of season one, Mobius has no idea who the heck Loki is anymore. So clearly they've figured out a way to continue to work together and to investigate Kang.
Correct.
And all it took was, and this is how quick this scene was. I had to ask my girlfriend what was said in that scene, because it went so quick, because the person next to me was freaking out so hard over the fact that it was just Loki season two, that like he wasn't even listening to what was going on on the screen. Geez. And he was like, basically like, oh my God, it's Loki. It's Loki season two. And I was okay. like, I couldn't hear anything that was being said, but I could see on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, all I could see was, you know, Mobius talking to Loki.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that like, even in that visuals, I still picked up the sense of what was going on. And then when my girlfriend said what was said, yeah, I was like, oh, that's good. Because yeah, with Loki, with Mobius being like, I thought you said this guy was dangerous. He was going to be a threat. You made such a big deal about nothing. And Loki's just like, no, like he's a threat. He's for real.
The terrible.
And like, face. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's enough for me to even like, again, when I go back and rewatch this, it's going to hit the same every time of like, oh, yes, here we go.
Because again, even if you're watching this movie and you think the Conqueror is dead, you get that Council of Kangs, and then you, and basically saying, we need to go after anyone who has touched the multiverse because we can't share this power with anyone else. So that's terrifying in itself. Not to mention,
there's that also sets up Loki season two.
Exactly.
Because that's all that they do in that show is monkey around with the timelines.
Yeah.
Jump in and out of the timelines.
Which version of Kang is in control of the TVA now? Because we saw the statue, you know, at the end of season one.
Which looks just like the Conqueror that we see in this movie.
It looked like He Who Remains with the robes, I thought. But maybe you're right. Maybe it was the suit.
Looked like the suit in this, so.
I just think there's, yeah, that was just such a cool way. Victor Timely, obviously, was the version that we saw of this Kang introducing a way to control time. People say time controls us, but what if we could control time?
It felt like I was definitely getting like Prestige vibes of like like Thomas Edison or Tesla, like that kind of a figure.
I was getting Howard Stark, Tony Stark, Stark Expo kind of vibe, like the very early stages of those kind of technology presence. Right.
Okay.
Which I also love that Victor Timely specifically was the person who was picked for this, because for anyone who doesn't know the comics, Victor Timely created like a separate pocket dimension at one point called Timely Wisconsin, which I, being able to hear so many different content creators over the past week just say Timely Wisconsin, I just get a little chuckle out of it every time I hear it. That's for us Midwesterners. That's
oh yeah.
Timely Wisconsin. Oh man. So I don't know if we're going to get that in the MCU, but who knows? Oh, overall thoughts now that we've dug into, I think, everything. I don't think there was anything else I wanted to mention.
No. Other than, I guess my final thought would be, if you haven't seen the movie at this point, sorry. We just kind of gave away everything. But don't let other people's like opinions like interfere with how you feel about things. Especially when it comes to movies like this. Because, again, this was a movie where I went into it being like, oh, I hope it's good, because of all of the things that I was hearing about this movie before it came out. And then like afterwards being like, this was again one of those times where I was like, did I see the same movie that all the vocal people saw, because like I did not have their experience. Like, I actually really liked this movie. And then like when we walked out of the theater and we got in the car, I even turned to my girlfriend. I was like, what did you think of this movie? I was like, I'll tell you how I felt, but like, I want to know how you felt first. And she was like, I actually really liked it. I thought it was pretty good. And I was like, right? And then I told her of all the things that I was, that like I had heard before we saw the movie. And we were both just like, well, that's weird. That's not the experience that I had. And if you look on Rotten Tomatoes right now,
I know,
like, the critics, I think it's at like a 47% for critics 48
right now. Yeah.
But the audience is like 85.
Yep.
So
that's my lesson. I'm going to stop listening to Rotten Tomatoes. Because
I never listened to Rotten Tomatoes, but
I didn't for this one. And like, especially because we saw all these reviews coming out before the movie, but then I saw all of the like nerds who saw this movie ahead of time. And they were like, I saw a lot of people like retweeting this or replying to this on social media. Like, I saw this movie. I don't know why the critics hate this so much. This was actually pretty awesome. And I was like, okay, so that's why I went in with a good mindset.
I texted you on Monday and I was like, and it was like midway through the morning, which for me is like halfway through my day. And I was like, why does everybody hate this movie so much? I don't understand it. And I texted you that because all of the podcasts that I listen to at work are like somewhat nerdy. They're very much like, you know, movies, TV, comics, streaming, all that stuff, all the things that we love. And they most of the time share similar opinions to us. Occasionally there's times where I'm like, well, I don't agree with that, but that's an interesting point of view. But for the most part, especially with the Marvel stuff, we're all generally on like the same page. But that day, all of those podcasts were just bashing this movie and talking about how much they hated this movie. And I was like, this makes no sense to me. And then the real kicker was, I don't want to say the name of it. There's a podcast I listen to that's a snooty podcast. It's a movie podcast, and they focus on more of like the indie, the Oscar type movies. And occasionally they'll talk about like the blockbuster movies, like the Marvel movies. And generally they're very snooty about their indie movies. And then when it comes to like the Marvel stuff, they're like, that was garbage. And then they'll go into their reasons why. And I just have fun listening to them. Cause it's like, yep, you're wrong. You're wrong. That's funny because of how inaccurate that is, but okay. And I was expecting going into that, because they did an episode on Quantumania, and I was expecting like, all right, here we go. I've listened to the past 4 hours of people bitching about this movie. Like, now we're really going to hear the bitching. They loved it. And they were along the same lines as us of like, where's all this hate coming from? Because... And they were ones that loved Black Panther 1 and hated Wakanda Forever. So, like, again, I'm expecting, like, complete bashing of Quantumania. And the fact that they were like, this is the best Marvel movie that we've seen since No Way Home. Similar to how I was. And I was like, whoa. What backwards universe did I stumble into where all of my podcasts hate this movie? And the podcast that should hate this movie loves it and is just as confused as me about all the hate behind this movie.
Very interesting. I don't understand it. I really enjoyed the movie. I had a lot of fun. I went Thursday. I went Sunday. And I loved it. I enjoyed it maybe a little bit more the second time.
I need to go back and watch it again. My problem right now is finding the time to, because especially like with work right now, like I said, I usually work only 4 days a week, and now it's getting to the point where I'm going to be working almost like 6 days a week, which is frustrating. But that being said, I wanted to see it again this weekend. I don't think it's going to happen because We're going to Cocaine Bear tonight.
we're
recording this episode on a Friday, and the lady and I are going to see Cocaine Bear.
I kind of figured you would.
Shortly after we're done recording here, it was like, all right, I got to pick the last movie. And don't get me wrong, I want to see Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
But part of me was like, maybe I would have seen Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania again if I had to pick. But yeah. I'm hoping for a fun time at Cocaine Bear. So,
all right. Well, before we wrap up the podcast, then, Brian, do you have any best stuff for the week?
Yeah, let's get into our favorite segment of the show. I'm going to keep this Quantumania related and say, I don't have a whole lot of Kang background as far as the comics go. Like, I've read a couple big event books that he's shown up in and has played a key role in, but like, I haven't really gotten into like the Avengers comics where he's like a big impact, or the Fantastic Four comics where he's like a big impact. However, there is one miniseries that came out last year that's collected in a trade paperback. It's called Kang the Conqueror, Only Myself Left to Conquer. And basically the premise of this is Kang, after going through everything that he's gone through in the comics, is like, there are things that I could have done better. There are things that, had I known in the past, I would have done differently. So modern day Kang goes back into his past, which is like in the year 3000. So our future, but back into his past, to when he's a kid, teen, and basically takes his younger version and is like, I'm going to mold you into the version that would best suit me in the future. So he's basically going back to like mold himself into a better Kang, based off of what he's gone through and learned and experienced. And this is a 5-issue miniseries that I think is a very good and interesting read if you want to know more about Kang as a character, not just like his past and all that stuff, because we do touch into some of that stuff, but just him as a character and understanding the things and experiences that he can go through. This is written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. The art is really good too. This book is currently on Amazon right now for $20 on paperback, or you can get it on Kindle. It's a good read. It's only 5 issues. It doesn't take that long. That is like the one series that, as a limited Kang experiencer in the comics, that I can give you. I enjoyed the series a lot. I read it before all this stuff came out. Like I said, it came out last year in single issues, and I was like, Kang's going to be a big part of the MCU in the future. Like, this is a series about like his past and all this stuff. Like, it'd be a good series to check out, and it's a really good series. So I highly recommend Kang the Conqueror, Only Myself Left to Conquer, for my best stuff of the week.
Awesome. For mine, I have a new channel that I discovered. Not discovered, it's actually just a brand new channel. I like to give... We're huge nerds. Anyone who listens to this podcast, we're all huge nerds. I like to give you more content to go watch and listen to other nerds talk about this stuff, because we like to deep dive into these movies, right? Well, so do the new rock stars. The new rock stars created a new channel called The Deep Dive, and it is Eric Voss doing just that. Deep dives into these movies and TV shows. Not only, and he's not just going in and breaking them down and reviewing them like he normally does on the other channels. He's literally trying to find hidden meanings within stories, trying to connect dots in the MCU, or just better explain some plot points with these different things. I've watched a few of their videos. The channel literally just launched like a week or two ago. They backlogged a few projects so that they could have a massive dump right away on launch day. And I've watched a few of the projects already, and it is so interesting, some of the things that they come that he's been able to take out of these that these deep dives. It's a very interesting thing for anyone who's a major fan of all these projects, like me, who I rewatch every single Marvel project 3 or 4 times, you know, probably 10 by the, you know, in a couple of years, by the time we get to that, I'll probably rewatch all of them 10 times. Who knows? But I just love those hidden details, those small different story development things that maybe you don't realize on the first one, or you just never see at all. I just really like that kind of content. So having a channel who is now dedicated to that has just been awesome to dive into. Said that a lot. Anyway, that's my best stuff of the week. The deep dive on YouTube. Go find them. Next week, Brian, would you like to tell us what we're talking about?
Yes. Before I do that, we have Ben, your Midwesterners.
I was going to do that, but I don't, whatever. I'm a terrible host,
apparently. M-I-D-W-E-S-T-E-R-N-E-R-D-S. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwesternerds. We are the Midwesternerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to midwesternerds@gmail.com. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe, be kind, please rewind. All of these things help this channel to continue to improve and grow and be the Midwesternerds show that you, the listener, want to listen to on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Next week, we are going to be continuing down the MCU Marvel road. We're going to be dealing with time a little bit more next week as well. We're going to be talking about the future of the MCU. Kevin Feige has done a few interviews over the past couple weeks, and there's been a lot of interesting tidbits and announcements and developments that have come out about a numerous amount of MCU projects. So we are going to deep dive into all that stuff next week. Do you want to sign us off, Kyle?
I just want to say,
I'll turn the reins back over to you.
You've had 100 plus episodes worth of practice on that. So
I have.
Yes, for your Midwesterners, I've been K.O. Kyle Olson.
And I've been not a dick, but Brian Stoffel.
And whether it's beer, brats, comics, or the quantum realm,
keep it nerdy.